says, "But we are at the crossroads, a Star Trek reboot Doom crossover thing, written by Stardust Cities and by Beverina Jenkins. The story is rated NC-17, contains the pairing of Reaper, Leonard McCoy, Jim Kirk, with warnings for explicit sex, sexual slavery, dubious consent issues, violence, and strong language." Reaper's not sure in the beginning why he does it. One moment he's half turned from the bar, staring hazily at the men who are hastily clearing the mess that is the pulsing dance floor, pushing drunk and drugged patrons off to the sides to make way for a small throng of people. Reaper doesn't realize what's going on until a man dressed entirely in black, which, really, is so cliché that Reaper wants to sigh, starts pointing into the crowd, yelling out numbers. The little gaggle of people behind him flinches when he raises his voice, like their nerves are fine-tuned to the fluctuation of his moods. There are four of them. The doctor in Reaper kicks in immediately, scanning them for damage. It's hard to see, what with the strobe light still going and the six dizzily spinning disco balls shattering their fractured light on the dance floor. But with his enhanced eyesight, he can make them out well enough. Four boys, six girls, all of them young. He wouldn't put what looks like the eldest, a broad-shouldered lad with a mess of red curls, at more than 17 or 18. The auction runs quickly, and Reaper can see the auctioneer getting more excited with every child sold off, his movements grand and sweeping, and his shoulders thrown open, chest puffed out. Reaper hates him instantly. It only grows stronger with every flick of his fingers, every boom of his voice that makes the poor creatures behind him cower. Within minutes, two of the boys and five of the girls are sold off, passed into the crowd and dragged away by wanton hands. Reaper's fingers tighten around his glass of bourbon, fingertips sliding slickly. He feels sick, but he's learned by now, from Olduvai and the Third War and the Reformation and medical school, they can't save everyone. 64,000 credits, the auctioneer shouts, gripping the shoulder of the last girl, a slim little thing that trembles, her eyes on the floor. She's passed away quickly, leaving the two boys. Reaper pulls his gaze away, back to his bourbon, determined to selfishly ignore the rest of the spectacle in favor of keeping his sanity intact. His attention is drawn back to the dance floor at the crack of a fist. The auctioneer's head snaps to one side, his hand falling away from the taller boy's shoulder. Three of the auctioneer's lackeys step forward, grabbing for the kid's arms, hauling him away even as he kicks, twisting and snarling. Reaper stares, stunned to see the display of will. He's lived on residency ships for the past 50 years or so, bouncing around under various names, and he's seen his fair share of slaves and slavers, arms dealers, drug cartels. These aren't kind places, aren't hospitable. Reaper feels something pleased ignite low in his stomach, his eyes following the split of the crowd where the slave is being dragged off. Already recovering and smiling, the auctioneer makes a joke that Reaper can hear but refuses to process, and goes on, selling off the last boy and clearing the floor, vanishing as quickly as he appeared. Reaper downs the last of his bourbon, scans his card to pay, and is tailing the guy before he has time to process what he's actually doing here. He's already down in the low underbelly of the ship when it hits, can already hear the sickening, pained grunts and the crunch of bone on bone. The auctioneer glances behind him, and Reaper turns his body, approaches the door like he's going to slip inside. Reaper waits until the hallway clears to jog down toward the noises, hears voices as well, crystal clear and echoing off the iron walls. He can distinguish 5 different men, and none of them are screaming in pain, so he assumes the 6th is the Spitfire boy. They joke, the 5, saying they might as well just pass the kid around until he's all used up, then airlock him, saying it's all he's good for, saying he's gotta be stupid to pass up their excellent services. Reaper's heard enough. He fingers his credit card and steps around into the alley-like hallway the men are gathered in. There are doors lining the hall, much like the hotels back on Earth, branching rows of rooms, but the doors won't open. People who have an ounce of self-preservation stay out of these affairs. Obviously, Reaper's lacking some sort of critical Darwinian mechanism. Gentlemen, he says, shooting for pleasant. He sounds more threatening than he means to, and one of the lackeys, a big, burly man, turns to face him, knees flexing, hips and shoulders squared. Reaper curls one shoulder, refusing to raise his hackles in response. Not here to fight, fellas. Just want to make a deal. Reaper eyes the crumpled body of the boy. He's shirtless and curled away on his other side, one hand pressed tight to the curve of his ribcage, his sandy gold hair matted with fresh blood. His back is littered with scars, shiny burn marks. Reaper guesses frequent use of an electric whip. Deal, the auctioneer repeats, smooth and condescending. For that? Yeah. Reaper tilts his chin up, holding eye contact. I got 100,000 credits with your name on them, and I'll take them off your hands. 100,000. And Reaper's tempted to snap. Is there an echo in here? But he can't ruin this. Feels the balance of this as thin and delicate as a nasal bone. You have to know we won't take that. I don't sell for less than 250. Reaper knows he's lying. Just saw the auction and saw most of the slaves go for far under 200. Knows he's being swindled. He expected this, and he's prepared for it. 250? He says, injecting helpless incredulousness into his voice. He's not worth that, and you know it. Sorry, Buck. You want to deal? That's where we deal. The man smiles like a snake, steepling his fingers. Reaper thinks abruptly of the Godfather. 250, he says again, knitting his brows. He pulls his card from his pocket, turning it over in his fingers, instantly feels all eyes snap to it. If you're sure he's worth it. Lip curling, the auctioneer steps forward, pulling a slim, portable scanner from his pocket. Doesn't matter. He snatches the card from Reaper's hand, all grandness again, like he's won here, like he's the one who's taken advantage of Reaper. He's your problem now. He strides from the hole, and his men follow him, their footsteps fading quickly in the wake of their laughter. Reaper waits for the lot of them to vanish from earshot, then moves to the boy's side, dropping into a crouch near his head. Hey, kid, you with me? Hand dropping to touch the mat of blood clotting slowly behind the kid's ear, Reaper leans over him. The beaten body curls away from his touch, shoulders hunching. Reaper draws back, elbows resting on his thighs, and listens for breath for pulse. Both there, shallow and unsteady. He scans the boy with the rest of his senses. He almost forgets, sometimes, how acute they are. What do you know? Sometimes he's actually grateful for the hell Sam injected him with. Need you to get up, he says, scraping his boots on the concrete floor as he stands, shuffling audibly back a few feet. Come on, don't want anyone finding us down here. The kid stirs, glances over his shoulder, His eyes are fiercely blue. His lips split, a nasty bruise blooming over his cheek inside a circle of rough abrasions. Reaper would bet his zygomatic bone is bruised, if not fractured. Come on, Reaper says again, softening his tone. He is steadfastly focusing on the new task at hand, treating the kid like a patient instead of the slave he bought. Sex slave, if Reaper can rely on his past knowledge of these things. Denial flirts with raw disgust, flickering under his skin. He tells himself it was for good reason, that the boy would have been killed if Reaper had just let that gang of thugs have their way with him. But logic wonders at him, his morals snapping their teeth in displeasure. Kid, I'm serious. Come on. Maybe it's the snap in his tone. Or maybe Reaper's let a little of the revulsion out. Whatever it is, the boy snaps upright, stumbling to his feet. This close, Reaper can see the cut of the man he'll be, as tall as Reaper and broad-shouldered, strong in the arm, with hips that will floor anyone who gets a real eyeful of them. As he is, he's 5 or 6 inches shorter than Reaper, his shoulders square, but not as broad as they will be. He stares at Reaper like a cornered rabbit, fingers dragging at the sweatpants that ride low on his hips. He was wearing a shirt at the auction, but Reaper can only assume the auctioneer's cronies ripped it off him to get at his skin. Reaper meets the kid's eyes and nods once, then turns on his heel and heads into the main hallway, praying the kid will follow him. We'll stay, logic crows, and we'll let Reaper treat him. We'll leave him the hell alone with his idiotic decision to haunt him. It's only moments before he picks up the quiet pad of bare feet, the way they press and tap on concrete. Reaper calls the lift, stands with his back to the kid, his attention focused so obviously on anything but his new charge that he's sure it's obvious he's trying to give the boy his room. He takes one corner of the lift, and the kid takes the other, his back pressed to the wall, eyes on the pad of buttons. Reaper leans back, watches the doors close. I'm on the 18th, he says, nodding to the pad of buttons. It's a test. He wants to see if the kid is literate, if he can read. Those blue eyes are defiant, narrowed. But the hand that reaches forward is hesitant, scraped and bruised knuckles garish under the left sliding. Reaper's eyebrows flick up as the kid presses the button for the 15th floor, the 16th, the 17th, and finally the 18th. Halfway to assuming the boy only vaguely recognizes numbers, Reaper checks his eyes for confusion, but sees only clear contempt. It's stubbornness, Reaper sees, not a little awed by the heavy spark of it. This kid would rather take a beating than just do as he's told. Some of the guilt balled in Reaper's gut eases. So he's not a lost cause after all. Reaper doesn't otherwise react to the disobedience, but the boy expects him to, the haunted glaze to his eyes and his curled fists, testament to the fact that he's used to punishment. The lift pauses at all the ordered floors, but Reaper glares so viciously at anyone who tries to enter that they're left alone. Just the two of them in a shining cage, trapped and gliding up. At the 18th floor, Reaper almost expects to be stepping out alone. But raucous, drunken laughter greets the loaf's open doors, and the slave slips out ahead of him, shoulders curled, fingers twitching nervously. Reaper moves up behind him, shuffling him away from a crowd of 15 or so sauced humans, and one Andorian, and toward his room. They pass another group, and when one of them gropes at the boy, Reaper's hand is there, reflexes so sharp he feels like he could use it to slice the slick-smiled bastard open. Back off, Reaper hisses, the slave frozen stiffly against his chest. He squeezes the man's wrist until the pain clearly becomes too much, and his dark eyes glint in pain. "All right, all right," he drawls, shaking Reaper's grip loose. Reaper shadows his slave to his room, which is at the end of the very last hallway. They pass a floor-to-ceiling window, and the boy pauses to look out, one hand raising unconsciously to press to the glass, the darkness of his bruises cutting the outline of his pale skin into space. Reaper feels something unravel in him, and leans there, next to the window, watching the stars reflect in the kid's eyes. "What's your name?" he murmurs, and the gaze switches to him, startled. He has noticed by now that there's not a whole lot of vocalization going on, though it's not for biological reasons, as far as he can tell. The slave swipes his fingers hesitantly across the transparent aluminum, then writes something with the tip of one finger. His palms are broad and his fingers are long, tapering. He sketches letters out, too fast for anyone else to catch, but Reaper's barely human, and he sees the letters as if written in bold black marker. J-I-M. "Jim," Reaper repeats, and Jim looks to him, unease thick in his eyes. He nods, and Reaper smiles a little, less queasy now. "Name's McCoy. Leonard McCoy." It's the name he chose to attend med school with, and he's kept it ever since. It suits him, he thinks. "Friends call me Reaper." Jim tilts his head, the barest trace of amusement flicking over him. Reaper shrugs. "Own nickname." He hesitates before giving away. "Last name used to be Grim." "Grim Reaper," Jim mouths. And yeah, he's smart. Reaper already knew it from watching the way he moves, the way his expressions shift, his willful defiance. But that clinches it. He is not at all the shell of a person Reaper has seen other slaves become. Leaning there and watching Jim watch stars pass them by, Reaper thinks for the first time that something good might come of this. Reaper gets his portable scanner on Jim the moment the door to his room is locked, runs it carefully over Jim's back and along his arms and over his fingers. He has 3 fractured fingers and a fractured wrist, 3 broken ribs, and his zygomatic bone is fractured as well. Reaper was right. The wounds on his back are too old to be regenerated properly, but the others are new, and Reaper's itching to get his hands onto the medical side of this, wants to fix Jim up until he looks so new it's like none of this ever happened to him. He's a good kid. Reaper can see it in him. Reaper holds up his regenerator where Jim can see it. "Know what this is?" Jim shakes his head. "It's a regenerator. I'm gonna put all those splintered bones back where they belong, all right?" Jim's eyes cloud briefly in confusion, but he nods, wary. Reaper fills a hypo spray with morphine, grateful for this side of the black market. He's a licensed doctor, but it's impossible to get licensed medical supplies flown to a ship like this, so he's had to rely on suppliers who work with less regulated means. Again, he holds it up for Jim to examine. Jim recognizes it, shies away so violently he drops the regenerator. It hits the floor with a shrieking crunch and whistles where it lies. Reaper scoops it up, unworried. These things are damn near impossible to break. "It's okay, kid, relax," he says, holding the hypo spray where Jim can see it. "Just painkiller. It's gonna hurt like hell knitting all that back together." He steps toward Jim, who dances away, leggy and spooked like a colt. "Jim, come on, kid." Jim bares his teeth, eyes flashing. His hands flex, fingers curling. He snatches up Reaper's pad, also acquired on the black market. It's Starfleet issue. Daps something in with a stylus, navigating screens with uncanny ease. He holds it up when finished typing. Stop calling me a kid. I am not your kid. Reaper takes it in, his patience wearing thin. All right, he agrees, sighing again. I'll stop if you let me give you this and fix your damn bones up. Jim goes back to typing. What is it? Told you. Painkiller. I don't believe you. Didn't expect you to, Reaper mutters. He bites down on the inside of his cheek, rubbing at the stubble on his jaw with one hand. Jim's eyes slide between his hands, Reaper's pad clutched in his own. Regeneration hurts like fuck, Jim. And? Frustrated, Reaper dials down the dosage and turns the hypo on himself, letting it puncture the side of his neck with a soft stick. Jim flinches, eyes widening, and Reaper shrugs a few times, shaking his shoulders out as his hypersensitive nervous system adjusts to the flow of morphine. There, see? I'm not out to screw with you. Jim wavers, then pads slowly around the bed to stand before Reaper. Sit, Reaper says, loading the morphine into a clean hypo spray. He lifts it to Jim's neck, trying to ignore the tension in Jim's shoulders at the slightest press of the pads of his fingers. Reaper carefully injects the morphine, the hiss of the hypo spray almost comforting. Jim shivers once, then goes limp, his eyes half closing. Lie back for me. Jim searches Reaper's eyes, rubbing the pads of his thumb and forefinger together nervously. Eventually he obeys, splaying on his back on Reaper's bed. Reaper starts with the regenerator, does Jim's ribs first, then his hands and arms, his face. It takes nearly an hour, and by the time Reaper's done, Jim is lax from the morphine, and his skin is prickled with goosebumps. Reaper rouses him enough to slide him under the comforter, and after, lets him sleep in favor of Bourbon's company. Jesus, Grim, Logic greets, blazing in after the alcohol's burn. What the fuck are you doing? The voice sounds suspiciously like Samantha's. Dunno, he says vaguely, wishes suddenly and ferociously that there was a window in his room, but there isn't, and he feels trapped here, pressed between the four walls and squelched in between his own bones. He stands, checks on Jim, and carefully scrolls onto his pad, in the hall by the window, in case the kid wakes up, and, for some unfathomable reason, desires his company. The constant motion of space outside the ship calms the jitters that slouch back into Reaper's stomach, stirring up his nerves and making him uneasy. He's gone from being uncomfortable with slavery to owning some poor boy. And fierce and unbroken as Jim comes off, Reaper can see the edge to him, the shattered bits under the defiance. Oh yeah, he's been hurt. Broken, maybe. But not where anyone will see. Way to royally screw yourself over. Still, here with him is better than with the auctioneer and his brutes. Jim would most likely be rapidly vanishing in an incinerator right now if Reaper hadn't stepped in. And Reaper won't deny that this place gets fucking lonely, the echo and distance of so many careless people crammed so close together. The doctor cultivated in him wants to try and heal Jim, and the scientist he was born as rears up, laughing at the notion of it. Fix isn't a word that applies in this situation. Reaper downs six more shots of bourbon sitting there, pressed up to the window and silent, ignoring everything else around him. He stumbles back to the room in the early morning. Registers Jim sitting up in bed when he enters, crisp blue eyes locked on Reaper, the width of his shoulders banded with thick tension, like he is already aware of what's coming, and won't allow himself to brace until the last possible second.
"Go back to sleep,"
Reaper says, dragging his coat to the floor. He bends an arm under his head, uncomfortably reminded of his military days, and fits himself into the recovery position, coat thrown over what of him it'll cover. Jim shifts vaguely in the darkness, the bed creaking with his weight, and then the room falls silent, and Reaper's gone, the constant thrum of the ship's engines shaking up through his body, catching him in its wake, and carrying him into nothing. So when he wakes up, there's a mouth on his cock. All in all, Reaper wouldn't usually consider it a bad start to a morning, and he half reaches down, mind still fuzzy from the previous night's, mornings, drinks, body hyper-aware upon first waking, every sensation multiplied, cock hard against his stomach, silky and hot. His brain kicks in the moment his fingers brush spiked, soft hair, and he bolts upright, instantly awake, pupils dilating too quickly to allow him proper sight. They adjust swiftly, and Reaper stares at Jim, who's frozen now, crouched in front of him, face pale, eyes widened. He's still wearing the sweatpants from the night before, thank God, but he's licking his lips and reaching for Reaper's waist again, easing in, the heated press of him making Reaper's flagging hard-on take renewed interest. Reaper catches Jim's wrist and shakes his head, forgets for a moment that Jim's just mute, not deaf. "No," he says, catching up. "Jim." Jim growls low in his throat, shakes his hand in Reaper's grip. "Get off," he says, and Reaper doesn't need a pad's translation to interpret the snarling gaze in Jim's two bright eyes. He's not aroused, not sexually, but what he is reminds Reaper of a case from his residency. A young boy's kidnapper had kept him in a sensory deprivation tank for weeks, and when he emerged, he was too shaken with overstimulation to function, his nerves too unused to deadened feeling to process the chaos that was the world. Reaper had lost him in the end. Coma. Jim's eyes are like that boy's now, feverish, his skin pricked and his fingers flexing nervously. "You don't have to," Reaper reassures him, drags a hand back through his hair. He probably looks a fucking mess, but Jim smells like sweat and blood, so... "Go shower, okay?" Jim only half rises from his crouch, eyes narrowed and wary. Reaper stays on the floor, nods towards the bathroom. "Go on." The moment the water starts running, creaking through the ship's rusty supply pipes, Reaper drags himself up from the floor, buckles his belt, and starts moving shit, picking up random items here and there, straightening things. Sam used to tease the hell out of him for this, but it's a habit and a coping mechanism, and he'll go stir crazy if he doesn't do something with his hands. He sets the pad out where Jim will be able to see it and use it, leaves clothes on the bed, a t-shirt from med school and jeans that are a hair too small for him. It'll all hang on Jim, of course. He's malnourished as well as young. But they're the best Reaper's got, and he's at least giving this a shot. Reaper keeps half an ear on the bathroom, listening as the water shuts off and Jim pads across the grimy tiles, his bare feet sticking. The sink twists on. Reaper hears the opening and closing of a cabinet, the faint whir of his sonic toothbrush. The residency ship might be old-fashioned, but he isn't. Those ridiculous 21st-century bristled nightmares are beyond unsanitary. He busies himself with convincing the old replicator in the corner of his room to work. It creaks and groans, but eventually complies, producing tomato soup and saltines. The door swings open, and Reaper turns, about to ask after the last time Jim was fed. But before he can, Jim is on him, pressing home a rough kiss, lips and teeth and tongue, working expertly to undo Reaper's building protest. He puts his hand on Jim's shoulder to push him back, and Jim rolls it, sliding in closer, pressing his chest to Reaper's and rutting his hips slow. He's naked, Reaper registers faintly, and he's all over, pushing Reaper back toward the bed. He pulls back. Jim, don't, Jim snaps, and takes Reaper's moment of shock at the fact that he does have a voice to snake a leg behind his and yank, forcing Reaper to his back. Jim drags his pants and boxers down, licks up his thigh and mouths at the base of his cock until he's hard again. Reaper's halfway up on his elbows, mouth open to tell Jim he doesn't have to do this, he can back off. But then Jim swallows him down, throat working, fingers digging into Reaper's hips, pushing him to thrust up into Jim's mouth. He does, an aborted half-movement, muscles straining when he realizes and fights it, telling Jim, "Stop, you don't have to." But Jim doesn't listen, just clambers up and straddles Reaper's hips, shifting, and then, Jesus, Reaper's in him, slick, hot, tight, perfect muscle gripping him, pulling him deeper, Jim groaning low and long. Reaper grabs for Jim's hips again, gets his fingers wrapped around Jim's sharp hip bones, and then Jim's moving, the easy slide of him drawing Reaper's gaze to the bathroom. Look at me. Jim snaps, riding Reaper hard and fast. He's hard, too. Cock flushed, and Reaper drops a hand down to stroke him in rough twists of his wrist. Jim's lips parted and shining with sweat, whining gasps ringing from him with every thrust. Reaper stares into his eyes, takes in his blown pupils, the ring of blue so bright it's almost neon, glazed over thick with lust. "Look at me," Jim says again. And it comes out desperate this time. He seems to catch himself, shakes his shoulders and arches his back to change the angle, take Reaper's cock faster, deeper. Something like panic catches hard in Reaper's stomach, but Jim cries out then, cum spilling over Reaper's hand, his belly rippling with tensing muscles. He rolls his hips in fast circles, pushes Reaper's hand away and drops down to suck marks onto his chest, until Reaper seizes an orgasm. It washes over him, twines up from the base of his spine, not quite pleasant. Reaper drops back, stares at the ceiling, feels Jim heaving for breath under his fingertips. He swallows, licks his lips, tries to look at Jim, who shudders and moves away, letting Reaper slide from him and dropping down from the bed to the floor. Reaper rolls to his side, watches Jim curl his knees to his chest and wrap his arms around them. "There," Jim says hoarsely, softly. "Thanks."
"What?"
Reaper sits up, leans over the edge of the bed and stanks his pants, pulls them back on. He slides over awkwardly to crouch by Jim, who curls away from him, tight and uncertain. Reaper touches his shoulder.
"Kid, what?"
"Thanks, Bones. What, can't take a thank you?" Reaper frowns, brows knitting.
"Was that what that was? A thank you? Does Jim think he fucking owes Reaper?"
"I thought you didn't talk," he murmurs, instead of commenting. Jim gives him a spaced, strange smile and doesn't answer. Reaper drags the comforter off the bed and wraps it around Jim's shoulders, then goes for the clothes he set out. Jim takes them, puts them on slowly, gingerly, like he's afraid to have them touch his skin. His dichotomy baffles Reaper. Spitfire one moment, this the next.
"I don't expect you to do anything for me," Reaper says when Jim is dressed.
He hands over the, now cold, bowl of soup and watches Jim lick his lips at the sight, suddenly and very clearly starving. Jim slurps it down, watching Reaper over the rim of the bowl.
"You will,"
Jim says. He cradles the bowl in his hands.
I might not want it now, but you will. And what'll you do when you haven't gotten payment then? I'm good at this. I can do this.
Reaper shakes his head, presses the packet of saltines into Jim's hands.
Don't want you to.
Jim wrinkles his nose, but eats steadily, chewing without looking at Reaper. Reaper lets him be for a while, and when he's done, takes his bowl and sets it on the desk. Jim's gaze is vaguely amused, and maybe a little pissed at the fussing. Reaper has never been the type to fuss, but he's also never had a sex slave before, and not one like this, like Jim, who's all tarnished gold, so young and utterly undeserving of the life he's been handed. Reaper dozes on the bed while Jim paces the room, wandering aimlessly from corner to corner, picking up and tapping randomly on Reaper's pad. Eventually, Reaper feels the bed dip and looks over to see Jim kneeling there, eyes lit on Reaper's face, fingers spread out on the bed, inches from Reaper's side. They stare at one another, cycle unbroken until Jim reaches out, touches the corner of Reaper's lips, and says, "Prove it." Reaper puts Jim on the next shuttle, makes sure he has enough credit chips and supplies to survive for a while once he gets to Earth. Jim's in Reaper's worn old military jacket, has it pulled tight despite the broken zipper, has Reaper's leather bag strapped across his chest and filled with clothes, shoes, food, anything Reaper could think of. Jim doesn't say thanks this time. Not for this. Just steps closer to the shuttle and turns to look back at Reaper. Reaper sees it then. All the things this kid will do with what Reaper's given him. Jim offers him a smile, a flash of teeth, and then he's gone, the shuttle's outline fading into endless black. Reaper thinks of Jim's hand on the window, sliced into space, carving a permanent mark. He goes to the bar, and after a few shots, forgets whether he's thinking about space or his own skin. Leonard. Just Leonard now. Hears about this Jim Kirk all over the news. About what a hero he is. How he saved a starship and her entire crew with his recklessly brave quick thinking. The Academy is abuzz with it all when he arrives, fresh from his week-long leave. The first he's taken since joining the medical track. Being a fully licensed doctor has helped things along, and he's well on his way to a ship assignment if he wants it. The Academy's enormous on-campus hospital is flooded when the Enterprise returns. Apparently, her medical bay suffered a hell of a debilitating hit during the mission. And Leonard himself is given the honor of treating Starfleet's newest, youngest captain. He's got his nose buried in Kirk's chart when he walks into the examining room. Broken ribs, a fractured zygomatic bone, and a sprained wrist. The familiar list of injuries makes his insides twist, ache. "Sure did a number on you," he says, and looks up. Jim stares back at him, his eyes still so blue, weightless now. He grins, quick and bright and whole. Breathes. Bones! Leonard is there when Jim cuts himself into Starfleet's history. When Jim asks him one night, both of them lazy and all tangled limbs in the captain's quarters, if he ever thought some half-crazy slave kid could make something of himself. Leonard tells him that, yeah, of course. He knew all along. The end.